This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
It's interesting, too, when you describe the hockey stick growth expectations that investors have. Yet, the end path or the end outcome can still be gigantic. So two of the largest companies in the world, I would say Apple and Tesla, as hardware focused as you can get, right? And then on the other extreme, you've got like a Google and an Amazon. And Amazon's becoming more and more hardware focused recently, but you know, they all have hardware components, but technology companies with general hockey stick growth. A lot of VCs struggle with the idea that prop tech inherently means the built environment, which is real. It's things we can touch and see. It's construction, it's buildings, it's hard assets. And there's two sides of it. There's the software side where you're automating workflows and you're providing a technology, either it's a SaaS model or it's a transaction fees. On the other hand, when you're tied to the hardware and the assets itself, the growth expectations can't be hockey stick. It needs to be more patient, linear, with large amounts of CapEx needed for sure, right? But if you get there in the end, it can be very lucrative. You can still get venture start returns, just that people are taking a software mentality to a hardware asset, which is wrong. I don't think you can, it's a different skill set or a different way of investing. I don't know if you agree with that.
I agree with that totally. I think that one thing, I mean, it's not necessarily asset heavy or CapEx heavy, because we found a way to be an asset light actually approach, but still the go-to market is not as hockey stick, because you don't unlock thousands of buildings at the click of a button. I'm not integrating to your community app and now I'm part of all your assets. I'm actually need to put the solution within every location that you're in. Look at the and it's almost of saying that the elevator business is not a great business. It doesn't scale. Holy shit. I have to now imagine the elevator being pitched to VCs today. They will say like, oh, what do you mean? I don't see scale. What do you mean you don't see scale? Like it's going to be or the laundry room in a building or a pool in a building or a gym in a building. So yeah. I think we're not necessarily, Envoy is using now a lot of vendors today, so we are scalable and we can unlock a lot of locations for us, it's not a CapEx at all. We don't have any CapEx towards, we don't need a lot of money to grow. But on the other hand,
you're tied to the way you get distributed, which is, I guess, you're not a hardware company, but you are tied to the distribution side. And there's a sweetness in that too, because I've noticed a dynamic with PropTech that is really unique versus other categories of investing, where you don't get deployed instantly to every single tenant. Often there's a pilot, right? And multiple pilots happening. But then you start to get integrated and you start to see a usage increase on two levels. Number one, your penetration of the entire tenant base. Number two, the average usage per tenant also increases. So I guess in your case, it would be the case of, you know, you might start with one car, which is shown to a few tenants, and then as more and more tenants sign up, that gives you such a beautiful ability to plan your growth. I would say it's better than any SaaS company, because you've got an underlying customer base that's finite. You can plan what the maximum potential is. You can also have more usage per customer as you grow, and you can get more penetration through that customer base. So I find that really unique with PropTech. It makes PropTech really, really safe. And I think one topical issue today is that with interest rates rising, it seems to have a knock-on effect on every area, real estate and technology especially. There are so many technology stocks that are down 80%. Valuations at late stages are getting crushed. There is some trickle down to the startup investing area, you know, pre-seed and seed. A rounds too. But I would say it doesn't apply in the same scale to PropTech. PropTech, like you are an example, your customer base is underlying real estate. It's not crypto fanatics. It's not, you know, user acquisition and software services, etc., right? These are people that need places to live. In some ways, it's the most recession-proof customer base you can find. And it is the inflation. So I think PropTech's going to do great through, you know, the period ahead. My prediction is it's going to be a bit of pain for the tech industry. PropTech is going to shine through this because PropTech startups are going to see growth. And those valuations PropTech startups command are a lot more sensible than other areas, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. I think it reminds me, now reminds me a lot. I mean, about 2000, 2001, kind of when the bubble burst then, I think.
And you've seen multiple cycles. You took advantage of the last cycle in real estate. So I'm really curious to hear what you think.
Yeah, I think I've seen three, right? There was one 2000, there was a small one in 2006 on the tech side. And then there was actually four. There was one that was also in 2012, 13. But it was small hiccups. The big ones were 2000 and then 2007. And I believe we're heading to another one now. I believe that, but what all those proved, and that was the core of Envoy and Inventure that I'm involved in. I think there's a lot of opportunity right now in the built environment in general that is yet unlocked. I think it's just the beginning of that. But what I want to say is, in every cycle and in every bubble that is burst, and now we're clearly living in a huge bubble, whoever has a true fundamental economical foundation. True economics kind of that works, that 1 + 1 actually equals 2. And I'm not talking about the 1 + 1 = 3 kind of mindset that everybody's trying to say. I said, like, really basic, I'm doing this and I'm selling that, and this is the value that I'm unlocking. I think we'll survive and we'll thrive. So any venture that is related to either creating an economical value or producing an economical value will survive. I think whoever is, and by the way, you see it in companies, you see who disappeared in 2001 and you see who continued being in 2006, the same thing, in 2013, the same thing. I think the idea for Envoy or PropTech or anybody that actually provides an actual value that is can be monetized or can be underwrite can survive. Now, I think the problems that companies have right now between what you said, fintech and crypto and marketplaces and like the unicornization, and it's the word that like kind of it's in my head, but unicornizing everything is a huge mistake. It's a huge problem that everybody's trying to be a unicorn. Everybody's trying to be $1 billion company or $5 billion companies. And everybody's now, if you go to Israel, every other company now is a unicorn. Everybody, if you go to Silicon Valley, everybody's a unicorn. And if you look at the actual business and the business model and you ignore the noise of like my target, my total addressable market is the universe, and you actually look at the growth, is you kind of see that there's no business, like it's not worth $5 billion or 50x multiple. It's worth maybe $500 million and or $50 million. So I think that's where you're going to see a lot of corrections. And
it's healthy, and it's healthy, right? Because it's
super healthy, because it's super healthy for the whole economy. Because now when you talk to an employee, to somebody you want to hire, like it's going to stabilize everything. People will move away from becoming millionaires of papers, and house prices potentially might kind of stabilize things, and coming with ridiculous requests for hiring. Like, yeah, it's going to calm down the system.
Glory, that's obviously a great outcome if that is the case. I mean, it's sad people will lose money, but also affordability should improve because you've got such disparity in incomes. But the fact is, there is a record amount of dry powder raised on venture capital. And many of these funds have delivered fantastic returns. Sequoia has generated 10x, you know, its fund numerous times. Those LPs are now addicted to that. And, you know, these are the people that are hype masters. They know this game. That dry powder sitting there, it needs to be deployed. I don't know. Rationally speaking, it would be great if things came back to normal. It sucks if you've invested. I've invested a lot in tech, and you know my portfolio is getting hit hard too, right, on the public side. But long term, we're in this for the long term. We want to see, you know, growth that's sustainable. But I don't know. I feel like you know, Tiger Global, one of the largest, you know, funds, is now coming in at the early stage, and Andreessen Horowitz is like a, you know, massive player. I don't know. I feel like this bubble continues. We had such a huge bull run, right? You got to admit, you've seen many cycles. This was an extended bull run that was like no other, right? Are we just going to see more and more hype cycles like this without going forever?
first of all, as an entrepreneur, I hope money will be still available because for my next venture, right? But and potentially for Envoy growth in general. But I'm saying, I do believe a correction is needed. I understand if you look at Sequoia's performance and Andreessen kind of and all those guys. I have a lot of respect to their kind of decision making. I think there are very smart people around there. People know what they push really. I mean, pushing valuation comes from different motivations, right? It's not necessarily because people truly believe that it's worth $500 trillion company, right? There's a lot of different kind of strategies behind that. I think there is a certain percentage of the current environment that needs to be corrected. I don't think the bubble will burst as strong as it was in 2008, 9, 10, or 2000, 2001. I believe a correction will be, and as we see, by the way, we see the correction now. Valuations are being dropped a bit. Yeah. So we see that minor correction. And by the way, going to Sequoia is not an easy thing. For pitching Sequoia, you got to really, really be in a place that they believe you. Like it has to pencil down. Sequoia didn't invest in, I don't want to say names, but in a lot of the ventures that I would personally wouldn't invest in because I think the valuation is very high or the economics underlying. So I think there is a healthy, smart, professional money managers, I'll call it, quote unquote, investors out there that knows to, as you said, see a trend, ride on that wave, but at the same time do more cautious kind of investment. I think the amount of money that we have that is not so much experience drove a lot of the economy up. People just generating suddenly millions of dollars by owning 100 Bitcoins and suddenly pouring a lot of money into either housing. And I'm not saying it in a bad way. Don't forget. I'm just saying if you're looking at an investment in general.
I get it. And people owning pictures of birds and monkeys that now are, not just status symbols, but extreme amounts of wealth. I take that point, and I'm in the venture industry currently, and huge respect for Sequoia, Andreessen, Accel, all these great funds. The pressure they face, though, is that some of the LPs want to come in direct. They don't face, I think the others face, right? They're the top tier. They're in a great place. But, Tiger Global coming in, you've got sovereign wealth funds coming in from many governments. Yeah. You've got SoftBank, and, this is a...
SoftBank is a good example. SoftBank is actually a case. I'm learning a lot because I'm also who knows. I'm learning a lot about Soft, like all of them. SoftBank versus Tiger versus Sequoia, and it's actually a very interesting kind of. If you look at it, I truly believe and that. I mean, I don't know much about Tiger, just so I don't want to sound like I know a lot about them. But from what I read. The way they invest is actually, it reminds me of real estate, by the way. It reminds me of like looking at an idea, underwriting it, looking at the board kind of minutes, seeing like if there's a consistency, if the team is doing that, but they make investment, they make a decision fast, which I truly believe, and it might contradict a little bit but it's not because I'm going to explain. I truly believe that to make an investment in a startup, you don't need 3 months of due diligence.
No, you don't.
You can know, I know for a second, if you would pitch me Envoy, I can give you an answer in 2 weeks because I know exactly what I need to check, what is my criteria, what I want to achieve and what I want to achieve by the investment, what I'm facing. So I think what happened, Tiger kind of literally saw that and said, I don't need all that time. I can unlock tons of money into companies and I can just take it all and actually support that, assuming they're doing an actual underwriting correctly, which I think they are.
And let's be frank, the venture capital plus is about the power law dynamics, where you need a large portfolio because so few companies will generate such high returns that coming in early is a great strategic advantage. I wouldn't just say coming in early. I would say the craziness we've seen has logic to it. There's method in the madness. When you invest at uncapped, crazy high valuations and you're pouring a bunch of money into very early stage companies, there is some genius behind that. Because ultimately, you don't now need to go and create a big brand and have scouts and have an army of associates and analysts and do extreme due diligence per startup. You just say, look, we are thesis-driven investors. We're going to write checks very quickly, so we're founder friendly. high valuations, and this is only a fraction of our total capital that we have. The game of venture, I believe, is following in on your winners. And if you deploy capital for access, that's smart. And every one of these funds has done really well because we talk about them. Obviously, they're in the, you know, they're in the spotlight. They've generated great returns. But there are a lot of followers. By followers, I mean folks that don't have a plan and are just spending stupid money and are dumping money into many asset classes. And that's where the danger really lies. Look, we got into this tangent because our hope is that salaries stabilize. You're not having to pay $200,000 for an engineer, right? And it just becomes unaffordable to start a company then if you know, just to get started, it's millions of dollars. And so I hope things normalize. I don't know. I hope, I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's, I'm thinking a lot about the effects of, I think as a society, I think it's very hard, and it's a little bit of kind of romantic what I'm saying here, but as entrepreneur, but I'm thinking there should be a balance. There should be a balance in, you know, I've seen some articles about a disappointing exit that a company had. They only sold for $40 million, $50 million, $70 million. And I kind of laughed at that kind of article. And I talked to my wife and the CEO, you know, what kind of a crazy world we live in. And nobody talks about the guy that opens five coffee shops and makes millions of dollars. Nobody talks about, like, there's so many entrepreneurial kind of mindset around us that you can unlock it. Because at the end of the day, entrepreneurship is an amazing skill, but it's also an amazing mechanism for somebody to get from a difficult situation or to thrive. So I think the world a little bit is lacking more of highlighting the struggles, highlighting the opportunity, and highlighting the success that if you came up with an idea and you sold your company for $10 million, you did amazing. You know what I mean? I think the world that we're living right now, and I always keep saying it to my kids, it's like coming with an idea or being drawn into an idea and kind of figuring out how to take it from an idea to an actual product, to actually provide salaries to people that work with you, to actually provide a value to your customers, to actually be successful on implementing. And then let's say you're selling it, to actually have somebody willing to pay $10 million for your sitting one day in your balcony and saying, maybe I should do this. That road, I don't think gets enough respect.
It does in a
global economical scale. And just one more sentence, I don't think people are putting too much attention to, as you said, to the sexy NFTs, crypto. It's a trend, right? Once it's mobility, second it's NFT, but too much of that, as we said, the hockey stick, the valuation, the startup world, the sexiness of being, the sexy factor of being, and not bringing that attention to a friend of mine that owns a chain of, I don't know, fast food kind of places, and he employs dozens of people, and he provides a lot of salaries, great income, and he's making a lot of money. That's a true entrepreneurship as well. So that, I think, is something that I'm a little bit kind of, I'm not sure sad is the right word, but kind of disturbed by.
I'll say it for you. I think it's the disease of our society where we all want to get rich quick. We want to lose weight instantly. We don't want to put in the hard work. We want instant gratification and results. That's why there's so many industries that target our insecurities. For the founder, the insecurity is, another company just raised a crazy amount at a crazy high valuation, and they all look like overnight successes, even though every single one of us knows how hard it is to build a company from the ground up and make it sustainable. And I think the message that is coming out here is that to build a company that provides value takes time. It's not an overnight success. By constantly looking on the outside and chasing what the industry is doing and the trends are and the competitors, you will lose sight of what you really exist to do, which is to provide value to a customer, hopefully as a byproduct of that value to society, and grow sustainably. And you deserve to grow, and you will grow, and you'll command margins if you deliver value. If you start recklessly spending and playing the game and hyping things up, it doesn't generally end well. Some people are doing pretty damn well because they got lucky, but lots of people are going to be burned at the end of this. It's always a greater fool theory, isn't it? It's like a Ponzi scheme. Some people benefit, but the majority don't. And the ones left holding the bag, ouch, you know, that's pain.
Yeah. I'm a true believer in, I know some of your audience might can hear that they know, oh, what is that? Like, they can go crazy valuation and do secondary, put $20 million in their bank or 30, 40, just basically. But that's not the purpose they built the company, right? It's like, we know of all of them that, and it's okay. It's totally, whatever you do, it's great. If you're investors and people pledge you, if you raise $200 million and you do secondary 20 for yourself, awesome. But that's not what you're supposed to, that's not the why, right? The why was, and if you ask people around me in my that works in my around me, for me, customer is everything. Like for me, brand, yeah, customer and customer satisfaction is everything. And the reason is because I can do 100 different things as an entrepreneur. If I'm doing this, I want this to be the best because I can do tomorrow. I can sell, I don't know, soda cans, right? You know what I mean? There's so many things that can be done once you have that skill to be an entrepreneur. But if I'm choosing one, let it be the best one, both economically and economically, by the way, to the company, but also to the customer and in the best quality ever. So I totally agree with that.
All right. It's been wonderful having you on today's podcast. Could you let some of our listeners know how to reach you and if there's anything in particular you're looking for? Is there a type of customer you'd like to connect with, or how can they connect with your company?
And thank you so much for having me. It's a great discussion, and I really enjoyed it. And I look forward for our one-on-one kind of continuous conversations. To your audience, I truly believe we're making a change. I truly believe Envoy is about unlocking value to real estate property, to real estate owners by the relationship they have with their tenants. So, and also enabling them. Understanding, putting infrastructure in place, but also mobility solutions. So I would say that anybody is kind of that feels that Envoy can be of use to their either the community they live in or the property that they own or operate. I'd love to kind of hear more from them. To get to hold of me, first of all, our website is envoytheHere.com. It's envoytheHere.com. And my email is exactly ori@envoytheHere.com. So, anybody who wants to, sorry?
O-R-I. Great. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.